Searchlights pierce a starry night sky, sweeping the clouds and illuminating a towering edifice in the form of the words, 20th Century Fox. 20th Century Fox, a News Corporation company.
I don't believe in heaven. I believe in pain. I believe in fear. I believe in death.
A man's head bursts out of dark water. He flails, desperately trying to stay afloat. But unable to keep his head above the surface, he slowly sinks into the gloomy depths.
There's an army of bodies under this river. Criminals. People who ran out of time. Out of friends.
He sinks beneath the icy surface. There are corpses in the weeds below. Light shines from behind a door marked Baby. A dark figure approaches the door.
Next time they drag this river, they'll find me on the bottom with the rest of them. There won't be anyone left to say I was different.
Bubbles come out of his mouth as he sinks. In a flash of memory, he pushes open the door. A woman in a floral dress lies on the bed, arms outstretched. He frowns as he looks down at her. A child's mobile stirs in the breeze. He hangs in the dark water.
I could feel the dead down there, just below my feet, reaching up to welcome me as one of their own.
Wearing a leather jacket, his short hair is ruffled by the current.
It was an easy mistake to make.
The screen goes dark. One week earlier, appears in red letters on a high stone building with a carved facade and an arched entrance.
All the cold investigations in the city are collected up and delivered over here to us. And we call each of the witnesses to see if they have anything to add to their original statements.
And if they can?
Then we send the file back to the original precinct for follow-up. Don't get your hopes up, though.
Two men walk down a corridor carrying files. There's a nameplate above a door.
This is the cold case office. Once you've been through the file and come up empty, you bring it here. Max here handles all our files. It hits his desk, the case is officially dead.
So what if there's no phone number for a witness? Should I do a follow-up in person?
No, we don't do that kind of stuff down here.
I don't understand, then how?
How am I supposed to solve the unsolvable murder mystery and redeem yourself?
Man, internal affairs...
Look, stop! All right, trust me. There's a tragic story behind why I'm standing here giving you this tour. We all did something, so just save it.
Detective Max Payne glances up from his cluttered desk in the dingy office.
What do you say we grab a beer after work or something?
Payne considers the new arrival with his suit and box of files. The guy picks up the box and hurries after the man who showed him in.
So what's the story?
There is none.
But back there you said...
Listen. His wife and kid were murdered. They never found the guy. That's his story. Remember when you were a kid and you'd hold your breath when you run past the graveyard? Just leave that man alone.
He stands frowning as his older colleague walks away. At his desk, Payne is reading a file headed Preston, William A. He goes to a large bank of filing cabinets and boxes. He takes a piece of paper from a drawer and adds it to the file before dropping it into a drawer. He sits alone at a table in a room with a black and white checked floor. Handguns and ammunition are neatly laid out in front of him. As he stares at an ammo clip, he remembers his wife's smiling face and her dark curly hair. He walks down the trash-littered platform of Roscoe Street subway station under harsh strip lights. Three rough-looking guys are huddled on a bench. One of them, thin with a moustache, is breathing heavily. Payne's boots fall in a measured step. A gold watch adorns his wrist. The thin guy grins unpleasantly as Payne approaches. The three look up as Payne glances at the watch. The thin one is sweating profusely. As they get up in pursuit, a small glass vial of blue liquid falls to the floor. Payne approaches the men's room. He takes off the watch, placing it on the edge of the sink.
Yo, homie, that's a really nice watch. Kind of reminds me of one I lost.
Payne eyes them calmly in the mirror.
Well, you didn't lose it. Pawned it up on 128th a few hours ago. Ask Doug, he was there with you.
The hooded black leader turns to the skinny guy.
Are you following us, asshole?
No. I'm only following you.
Oh, hell no. Aren't you a cop or something?
Payne's badge is in his pocket.
Not tonight.
That's too bad. Now go get my watch.
Doug hesitates.
Come on, Doug. Come get his watch.
Doug bites his thumbnail nervously, then approaches Payne.
I guess this ain't your lucky day now, is it?
The gun's pressed to Payne's forehead. He eyes the guy steadily. Doug knocks the watch off the basin. Payne punches the gunman and grabs his arm. The shot hits the mirror. As the leader goes sprawling, Doug ducks into a cubicle, and the third guy runs out. The gun's dumped in the sink, and Payne draws his weapon. Payne unloads into the cubicles as Doug scrambles along the floor. The third guy runs along the subway tracks. The last cubicle's blown open.
Watch over me.
Open your eyes. Now! Have you ever seen this woman?
It's his wife.
No.
You got busted robbing a house in New Jersey with William Preston 6 months ago.
Bill's dead.
Why the hell do you think I'm talking to you? Did you ever hear anyone say anything about this
Bill
woman?
Died. Bill died because the wings couldn't lift him up.
No, he got shot robbing a liquor store. What are you talking about?
Yeah, the wings are gone, actually. They're a little black feathers.
Get up!
The third guy looks fearfully over his shoulder as he runs down the dimly lit tunnel. He slows and brushes at his sleeve as a newspaper blows past him. His brow is furrowed with fear. He looks around at moving shadows down the tunnel and above in the crumbling concrete ceiling spaces. He's floored by a fast-moving shadow. More move in around him. He flaps his arms, vainly trying to fend off the dark, ghost-like attackers. Then his eyes widen as he's flattened by a train. Snow falls on the nighttime city. Payne knocks at a badly scuffed door.
Hey, buddy.
Man, I told you not to come here.
Well, William Preston was a dead end.
Look, I am done helping you, Max. I paid my debt to society, you know? I've cooperated enough, man. Okay?
What's going on in there?
What, it's a dinner party, okay?
I'm a little offended I didn't get my invitation.
Well, I didn't send out an invitation. Look, I told you, go find Bill's partner.
I did. Doug, you only wanted to talk about birds or something. He was a whack job. Now I need a new name.
Well, I'm out of ideas then.
Hey, baby.
Okay, what? Not now, bitch! Look, okay? I told you, I don't know those kinds of people now. I've moved up in the world, Max.
Yeah, I can see that.
Damn, this is a dinner party. All right, these are my friends. Do you remember friends?
Listen, if you don't give me a new name, I'm gonna start frisking every one of your friends.
3 years on the street is a lifetime, man. Whoever you're looking for, there's no way they are still out there. You're chasing ghosts, Max. But try sleeping once in a while. You can see that for yourself.
I don't need all of Trevor's friends.
Max, Natasha, Natasha, Max. Jesus Christ.
Is that a life?
I don't smoke. It's interesting.
What?
Your tattoo. That's interesting.
Oh, thank you.
It's a wing on her wrist. Sharp-dressed Barney is talking to a tough-looking crew. A gun is shoved in his face. The grim-faced gang make their way into the party room.
Shit.
What?
Slim Natasha throws down her cigarette. A severe woman in black approaches.
Stay back. What are you doing here?
This is yellish. You can't keep pulling her around.
Come with me. Hey.
Mind your own business.
You have no right to be here.
Huh? Yes, it is.
I'm clean. I'm not doing anything wrong.
Да? Да, идем домой. Иди со мной.
Why don't you relax? It's a party. Have a drink.
She sees Payne's badge as Natasha approaches.
Just stop it. These are new friends. I don't see the others anymore. He's a cop. How much trouble can I get in?
The intruder glares darkly at Payne and Natasha, then leaves. Payne frowns as she leaves the party, surrounded by her threatening leather-clad entourage.
My sister. Sort of a bitch.
Max! You have to go! Payne, now!
I need to ask her something first.
He walks across the room with its flashing lasers and beautiful people.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Silhouetted by flashing strobe lights, he enters a room in semi-darkness, lit by candles and crisscrossed by lasers. He passes two scantily clad girls. Light streams out between curtains loosely closed across a doorway. He glances around, then approaches the drapes. Peering through the gap, he sees a naked woman, her eyes closed, and a hand with a winged tattoo on the wrist, reaching for one of several vials of blue liquid. He turns to see a huge, burly guy standing next to him. He's got the winged tattoo on his hand and smiles ominously as Natasha catwalks across the room in a short red satin dress and thigh-high boots. Payne frowns as he and the big guy eyeball one another.
There you are.
Where'd you go?
Take me somewhere. I'll tell you. See you around, Lupino.
She pouts teasingly at the big man and guides Payne away. Lupino, with wing tattoos down his cheeks, purses his lips and looks disappointed as she leaves. A blonde, in a room lit by clusters of candles, takes a swig from one of the blue vials of liquid. Her eyes widen with fear as she looks up, and dark shadows spread across the ceiling. The blonde pushes herself into a corner against some cushions, staring at the ornate molded ceiling in horror. The shadows move and spread as a fan slowly turns. The snow falls silently in an alleyway. As Natasha arrives home with Payne, she throws herself at him, kissing him.
Easy.
Oh. You just move in?
So we're somewhere. What's going on in that room back there?
She shrugs off her red dress, revealing her slender physique.
Hey. Who was the guy with the tattoos on his face?
She's on the bed, covered by a sheet, her boots still on. She pouts at him seductively.
Fine, what was her name?
What are you talking about? Who?
The girl from the boring story you want to tell me? The one that ends with you living here? Very sad. I tell you what, call me by her name. Like this, you can make love to her just like she never left you. Oh, Max, I miss you.
His face hardens in anger.
Get out.
Excuse me?
I said get out now.
Are you kicking me out of your bed?
Yeah, get your shit and get out.
She breezes out, pulling her red dress on and grabbing her leather jacket, as he stares fixedly in the opposite direction. The snow whirls around a rooftop as a figure moves among the ducts and tanks. Below, Natasha rounds a corner of the building, walking past piles of snow and bin bags.
This is Owen. Leave a message.
Owen,
It's Natasha.
Where's the Pino? I need some more stuff.
Yeah. Call me, okay?
She's watched from high above as she walks down the alley. The figure on the rooftop is Lupino. He scowls. Natasha turns the corner into another alley lined with trash and dumpsters. Moths hover around a light. Light bulbs explode just behind her, showering sparks. A huge shadow passes along the side of a building. As she stares, the shadow expands wing-like on a wall behind her. She breaks into a run. The shadows flap along behind her. Eyes like pinpoints of light shine out from a dark shape. She trips and falls. Payne switches off the coffee pot on the gas hob in his apartment and rinses out a cup, shaking the water from his hands. He slips into his jacket and picks up his keys. He feels his pockets, thinking, looks under a folder, then puts it back down. He approaches the grand facade of the police station, crossing the busy road past two parked NYPD police cars. He looks around and sees a scruffy, bearded guy in a plain car with a flashing red light on the dash, signaling to him from across the road. Crosses the street, not even flinching as he's nearly mown down by a taxi.
What? Look, jump in, will you?
He thinks for a moment, then gets in next to the guy who's got a straggly beard and wears a woolen beanie hat.
Where are we going?
I need you to look at something.
They arrive at the alleyway. There are marker cones on the ground, yellow incident tape cordoning off the area, and a team of crime scene investigation officers. The black car is seen from above as it pulls up. Payne and the driver duck under the marker tape.
What happened to them? Her. Just one.
As they examine the ground, one of the other officers recognizes them.
I don't believe it. What are you two, back together again? And you kiss and make up?
Where are we on the weapon?
We're nowhere yet. I mean, looks like a blade, but too much blood for that to be right. Hey, O'Brien! A second. Hey, listen. How long do you think it's gonna take?
Why are you showing me this?
We found this here. Did you know her, Max?
Payne's brow furrows as he's shown his own driving license. Crouches down and lifts the white sheet covering the body. There's a wing tattoo on the wrist.
It's Natasha.
Let's take a ride.
As they head back to the car, a hooded figure watches from far above on the roof. It's Lupino. In pouring rain, the black car arrives at a bar called the Citizen. His former partner gets out of the car, followed by Payne.
What are we doing here?
We're getting a beer, right? You'd rather do this in the street? Fine. You were with the victim last night. Your wallet was found in the alley. If you don't want to talk to me, they're going to send somebody who doesn't know you and won't care about your side of the story.
I didn't kill her, so I don't need a side.
What's going on, Max? What are you mixed up in, man? You can talk to me!
Payne's frown deepens.
You know what they think about you at the force already, right? You should hear all the questions I get about my old partner.
Well, good thing you got my back then, huh?
What's that supposed to mean?
It means that with your follow-through on unsolved murders, I don't have much hope for that girl in the alley.
Is that what you think? That I didn't work Michelle's case?
They stare at each other.
I did everything. Everything!
He's still out there somewhere. One of them is still out there. That's everything.
All right? We're done here.
Come on. Max!
Very good.
Pleasure doing business with you.
It's Natasha's sister, surrounded by sharp suits.
Что-то случилось с Наташей.
Her features remain impassive, her eyes hidden behind dark glasses. A photo shows Natasha's tattooed wrist. Payne's ex-partner at a desk covered in photos leans back wearily in his chair. He darts forward and grabs the photo again, reaches for his keys and opens his desk. He gets out a file headed Payne, Michelle. He flicks through the pictures of his ex-partner's dead wife and pulls one out. The dead body of a man lies face down, a machete in its hand and a wing tattoo on the wrist.
Detective Max Payne.
It's not available. Please leave a message.
Max, it's me, Alex.
Natasha's sister sits at the counter of a low-lit, elegant bar with a balding man in a sharp suit.
I'm Sax. Sorry for your loss.
The uniformed cop pulls out a piece of paper and hands it over to her.
And pulled her cell phone log. Last call was to an Owen Green.
She stares at him.
Called him twice.
She glances at the man in the suit, who uses a pen to push a banknote off a large pile and move it towards the cop, who picks it up and leaves. Sax opens a piece of paper. It's a photocopy of Max Payne's driver's license. Her eyes burn into her business partner.
Max, it's me, Alex. You're not going to believe this, but I think there's a connection between that girl in the alley and Michelle's murder. I'm heading over to your apartment right now.
Payne looks at his watch. An older car with chrome bumpers pulls up in a snowy nighttime alley. Payne, wearing stout boots, gets out and runs up a darkened staircase. He approaches an apartment door which stands ajar and draws his weapon.
Alex, are you in here?
He moves slowly, weapon raised, into the darkened apartment. A fan turns slowly in a window.
Alex?
A blind casts lines of shadow on the living room wall. He looks around, then moves into the hallway. A wardrobe door swings and a lamp lies on the floor, its bulb flickering.
Alex?
He edges down the hall and gets dazzled as the lamp bulb flares. In the cracked mirror on the swinging door, he sees Alex lying on the floor.
Alex?
There's an explosion of red as he's hit from behind, knocking the gun out of his hand. A powerful grip slams him against the wall, and the world flashes red as he's hit again. Alex lies dead as Payne is battered from wall to wall in a series of red flashes. Thrown to the ground, he tries to crawl away across broken glass. Rolling onto his back, he unloads his gun. The apartment block appears in a red haze. As the red fades, he snaps awake, his head on a pillow.
The ER doctor's old man was a patrolman in the 45th. Got you on a quiet floor.
Maybe. Where am I?
St. Mary's. Came in looking pretty bad, Max. What happened?
I don't... Alex.
When dispatch couldn't raise him, they found out from Krista where he'd gone. First unit got to you in time. But Alex is dead.
I got six shots off. I hit something. Someone, you gotta check the hospital. You gotta check it.
I'm not a cop anymore, Max. I came to see about you.
You wanted to tell me something.
Listen, anything you can remember will help. They got nothing for leads. The whole force has you pegged as the prime suspect.
Now you tell them where to find me.
Wake starts in an hour. I'll pass that along.
He hauls himself painfully upright in the hospital bed.
What do you think you're doing?
Paying my respects.
Not like that, John. I should have a clean shirt for you at the office. It's on the way.
The older man gives a sympathetic look. snow is still falling on the city from a slate-gray sky. In a queue of people at a coffee stand outside a large modern building, a young guy in a light-colored overcoat is reading a paper. A headline reads, "Grisly Murder in East Harlem." He frowns as he reads on. Third one this week. Body parts litter alley in brutal slaying. Police suspect drug dealer connection. He looks concerned. A guy opens the door to a smart black car. The older man and Payne get out.
Mr. Hensley? There you go.
When did they move in here?
I guess we got the building last year.
We?
Sorry. Gets to be a habit.
The Acer building is a soaring steel and glass skyscraper. Snow swirls around it. In the lobby, a sign reads, Acer Pharmaceuticals, with a wing design on the logo. They approach security.
Morning, Spike.
Good morning, Mr. Hensley. You know the drill, sir. Sign in your guest, please.
Payne surveys the cavernous concrete lobby.
Oh, my God.
A smartly dressed woman with the guy from the coffee queue spots Payne.
Max.
This one.
How have you been?
Fine, thanks.
I hope you know you can always call me. Please, Max, if there is ever anything we can
do. I know, I've been meaning to. I got the cards.
She was such a bright light in this company.
Payne clocks the young guy. Hensley opens a wardrobe.
I'm not making any guarantees that any of this will fit.
A magazine cover reads, a message from the CEO with Nicole Horn's photo.
I saved one of those for you. Third page from the back. They set up a scholarship in her name. Kept coming to me for suggestions about what she might want. I said art.
The Michelle Payne Memorial Scholarship Fund.
She liked art, right? They knew we were close. Thought I was family. It's a nice thing, scholarship. Good way to remember somebody. Hey, Joe. Max, you remember Joe, right?
Hey. You here picking up some overtime?
I think twice about that. Here, the boss is a real asshole.
Now that he's head of security, we're supposed to laugh at his jokes.
They still pay me like the janitor.
She's looking for you. Just tried me in my office, too.
Hensley shrugs.
Give me a second. Yeah. Nicole.
Payne wanders to the window holding a shirt. He and Hensley stand in the snow. Expressionlessly, Payne looks up at people gathered on the porch of a white wood frame house and slowly walks up the steps. Inside, a young dark-haired woman looks grief-stricken. Payne approaches her.
Krista.
All I would have taken is one word from you. To give Alex some peace. Are you happy now, Max? You made him think he hadn't done enough. What have you done, Max? What has Max Payne done? Except for bring misery. To everyone who ever cared for him. Now, please get out of my house. Let's just go.
She fights back her tears as Payne, his frown deepening, turns and leaves. Accompanied by Hensley in dark glasses, he crosses the porch and walks down the wooden steps. A black car pulls up.
Ah, jeez, watch out for this prick.
Detective Max Payne? Jim Brevera, Internal Affairs, I need you to come with me.
Now?
Yeah, now.
He tosses Natasha's file across a desk.
How'd the girl have your wallet?
She stole it.
What do you mean stole, like, picked your pocket?
Payne eyes him steadily.
How was it you knew each other?
Met through a friend.
Trevor Duncan. He's your friend.
I guess.
That's classy. You know what Trevor does for a living, I assume.
He used to snitch for me.
Oh, he's...
Bravura smiles to himself.
Tell me something, Max. What's a glorified file clerk still need a snitch for, huh? So you pissing a cup for us, right?
You just said the magic words. Why are you calling? You here from a union lawyer.
You and Detective Balder haven't worked together since your reassignment. What made you get back in touch, huh?
He wanted to talk.
And? Hey, asshole, I got 2 bodies and 10 body bags, and you were the last person to see either one.
Yeah, and some of that blood is mine. Good luck with your case.
Nice work, Detective.
Look, if you're really his friend, then talk to him.
Hensley gives a half smile, nods, and walks away. Bravura closes the office door with his name on it.
Well, let's hope that felt good. Makes you look guilty. You understand that, right? Not just Alex's unit that thinks you're the guy. You need friends on the force right now. There's only so much I can do from the outside.
A sign points to homicide.
Where are you going?
Payne walks out of the lift. He strides down a crowded open plan office. Officers stand and glare as he passes.
Hey, I don't believe it. Just a guy.
Get the son of a bitch.
Where you think you're going, asshole?
Unbelievable.
The detective in that office was killed. Get back here, asshole. Where you think you're going?
There's no point running, Max. What are you gonna do in there?
He walks into an office with Alex Balder on the door. He approaches the desk and starts searching through papers.
Back up! Back up! Make a hole! Back up, goddammit! Make a hole!
He calmly tries the desk drawers.
Open up, Max! Open up the goddamn door, Max!
He empties out pen holders.
Open up! I'll make it harder, Nate! Open up!
As the office door is kicked, he kicks open a drawer and grabs some files.
Open up this door!
Finds Natasha's file. There's a list of calls to Mona Sachs, John Moran, Jack Opino, and Owen Green. He scrunches up the page and pockets it, then rifles through more pages. On the photo of the guy with the machete, same as Michelle, question mark, has been written across the body, and Natasha, question mark, next to the wing tattoo. Snow billows through the open window.
Son of a bitch!
The senior officer looks out into the blizzard. The snow reflects the nighttime city lights. Hensley walks into a bar.
Hey, Mike. Where is he?
Payne's out the back in an alleyway.
For God's sake, Max. You're gonna freeze to death. Why don't you come inside?
Alex knew something about Michelle. Something new.
Don't you think he would have told you if he had something like that?
He was trying to the night he was killed. Whatever was in the room that night with us,
whatever... What exactly do you think you're looking for?
Forget it, all right?
Max, talk to me. Max! Now where are you going?
As he walks down a rundown street, past a homeless guy crouched in a corner, he's eyeballed by 3 heavies in long black leather coats. They keep staring as he walks by on the opposite side of the street, past a brightly lit pharmacy, and down an alley. He turns around and draws his weapon, pointing it towards the end of the alley, as he walks slowly backwards. As he backs into the shadows, a machine pistol is leveled at his head.
Drop it, shithead.
Take it easy.
Remove your backup piece with your left hand.
Reluctantly, he removes a revolver from the small of his back.
That's it.
Kneel down.
What?
Kneel the fuck down!
She steps into the light, revealing the dark eyeliner and striking features of Natasha's sister, Mona.
You need to talk about my sister.
She hits him with an extendable metal baton.
Look, my partner was killed too. We're both looking for the same person.
Yeah, you.
Struck across the body, he gets up, eyeballing her, shaking out a painful left arm.
Who's Owen Green?
How did you get that name?
Look, Natasha called him.
Don't say her name.
I heard her call him, okay? Owen's probably the last person who saw her alive.
Yeah? Except for the guy that left his wallet laying by her body.
Does that sound like something a homicide cop gets wrong? Whoever killed your sister probably did the same thing to my partner, and maybe I... Look, you want to help? Help me find Owen Green.
He lets go of the baton which he grabbed, and they study each other. Snow swirls in the street lamps around an apartment building. Lights still burn in a few windows. The car's headlights approach slowly up the street.
Right here. Green is on the top floor. You know what I do for a living. You try anything and I'll kill you.
He eyes her dispassionately, then turns away as she looks at him in turn. Payne, holding a powerful torch, leads the way up a dark, shabby stairwell. There's black and white checked tiling on the ground floor and wood paneling on the wall. As the torch beam sweeps the trash-covered stairs, a figure lurks above, carrying a large blade. The torch shines down a corridor with graffiti on the walls and a flickering strip light.
Who's this guy?
Some junkie my sister used to know.
A guy in a grimy vest stands hyperventilating in a room hung with strips of torn plastic.
Owen! Owen, open up! Owen?
He stands still, staring around the wrecked, derelict room.
Owen?
He flails at imaginary enemies.
Hey!
He stares at the shadowy ceiling.
Owen! Hey, Owen!
They're coming!
Owen, look at me.
Owen, look at me.
I know Natasha called you. Do you know what happened to her?
She's gone.
He steps back into the shadows.
Owen?
He's backing out of a hole in the wall and a sheer drop.
Owen, just relax.
They took her up in their wings.
He's got wings tattooed on his arm.
They took her.
Owen?
He grabs at the sides of the glassless window, closes his eyes, his face becoming calm, and moves backwards. Payne darts towards him in slow motion, dropping the torch. Owen isn't falling. He's being pulled out of the building by a huge winged creature which grabs him, then drops him into the alley far below. He falls onto a car, making all the windows explode outwards. Payne and Mona reach the casement and look down.
Jeez.
As they move back into the building, Jack Lupino, with his tattooed face, is lurking on the darkened stairs. Snowflakes settle on Owen's wing tattoo. The basement shop has the word tattoo in lights outside.
You know, it isn't anything new. People jump out of windows, they go crazy for no reason, it just happens.
Payne looks at her skeptically, and they pull up by the tattoo parlor.
My Natasha got all her work done here.
They enter the dimly lit parlor with tattoo designs on the walls.
I'd have to call you back, okay? Can I help you with something?
Yeah. I wanted to get this tattoo.
You in the Marine Corps?
This one.
What's it mean?
It's the wings.
That's a Norse Valkyrie. Vikings used to wear them for protection. Valkyries fly over the battlefield, picking out the righteous dead. They reward the people who draw first blood. A soldier's angel.
He picks up a large leather-bound book.
In Norse mythology, the only way you get to go to heaven is to die in violence. You die in your sleep, you go to hell.
Protection from what?
Huh?
What do you mean, huh? You said people get the tattoo as protection. What are they afraid of?
The hawk-nosed man looks nervous. Sweating, Lupino shrugs off his vest, revealing wings tattooed on his back, picks up a large blade, and turns to a panicking man strapped to a chair. Candles burn, and men in camouflage stand behind the victim. Lupino picks up a vial of blue liquid. He stands behind the struggling man's head, grins, purses his lips in a soothing hush, then pours the liquid into the man's eagerly awaiting mouth.
What about my body?
The guy gulps down the blue liquid. The empty vial is dropped to the floor. Lupino then tosses a full one to one side. The guy rips the tape binding him to the chair and dives manically after the full vial. A dark winged shape flits across the room. As the guy reaches the vial, a boot comes down on his hand. Lupino grimaces and pushes down harder. The guy looks horrified at the loss of the drug. He laps at the dregs and the broken glass. Lupino stares down at him, then closes his eyes. He strikes with the blade. As the killing takes place at an old industrial building, lights glow in old harbor buildings across from the gleaming lights of the city. A car arrives on the pier. It speeds through the softly falling snow, pulling up beside piles of old tires.
This is far enough.
Payne watches expressionlessly as Mona gets out, then drives on. She approaches a door. A spy hole slides open.
I need to speak with Lincoln.
A guy with a rifle stands menacingly in dim light by a door covered with geometric designs. The door slides back, and Mona is escorted in by an armed man in a Hawaiian shirt. She hands over her machine pistol and looks at the man sharpening a knife behind a large desk. The room has soft, yellow lighting.
She expecting company there, Lincoln.
It's very dangerous right now. I hear about your sister.
Yeah? You know anything about it?
She will not be the last.
What about the tattoos? Huh? What do they mean? The wings.
He mocks them.
And what does that mean?
The devil is building his army.
Yeah. Does this devil have a name?
Many. The one you are looking for is Lupino.
There are flashes of Lupino with his last victim and licking his lips.
A place called Ragnarok. It's an old club. East side.
Lincoln, a scar on his cheek, eyes Mona.
Listen, you still got an in with the cops, right?
He nods.
See if they know anything about a detective, Max Payne.
Max Payne.
What?
Max Payne, he's been hunting. 3 years of kicking down doors. He is looking for something that God wants to stay hidden. And that's what makes him even more dangerous.
She breaks eye contact, thinking.
Mona, stay away from Max Payne. You don't want to be near him when Judgment Day comes.
Payne heads back to the city, crossing a bridge slick with packed snow. As he drives one-handed, he looks around with his usual emotionless frown.
They tuck her up in their wings.
The wings are golden. The feathers only look black.
That's a Norse Valkyrie, a soldier's angel.
She was such a bright light in this company.
An illuminated sign points to Gognitti's self-storage. In the shelter of the flyovers of a road junction stand a cluster of metal storage containers. A chain on a fence swings in the breeze, and a large gate slides open. A figure moves among the large rectangular units. A door opens, and Payne steps in. The lights come on down the length of the container, with rows and rows of storage boxes on shelves and a desk at one end. He moves down the uniform rows of boxes, studying the contents marked on the outside. Nursery, garage, bathroom, and Michelle's office stroke home. He pulls out that box. Removing the lid, he looks at the folders inside. The first one, marked Asa, is empty. He pauses at another marked Asa Pharmaceuticals and runs his thumb thoughtfully over the Wing logo. He drops the file back in the box and stands thinking with his arms braced against the desk. He walks into a diner decorated for Christmas and strides down past the counter to where Hensley is sitting in a booth.
What is it? What's going on?
It isn't that I've been missing something. It's something is missing.
So?
BB, what do you mean so? What would somebody want with her work papers?
I don't know.
Who would then? Her old supervisor. What is his name? No,
Max,
that's Naughty Nose Little Preppy
Prick.
Enough. What is his name? Colvin. John Colvin. Is he still around?
Hold on, Max.
BB, is he still working for the company?
Hensley looks uncomfortable.
Jason Colvin. Guy's name is Jason.
Thank you.
As Payne strides out, Hensley hangs his head. He clutches a hand to his forehead, then brushes back his receding gray hair.
This is Detective Bravura.
Detective, I need to speak with you about Max right away, please. It's urgent. Detective, thanks for seeing me at my office. I need to explain what happened to Max. The file can't tell you everything. Maybe you think that's all you need to know about Max.
Bravura watches Hensley attentively.
Can't tell you how beautiful Michelle was. How happy they were together. Can't tell you how the baby looked just like him.
Payne's in a park, looking across at a darkened house between others festooned with Christmas lights.
It started out as a robbery. That day, though, the perps were out for something more.
Payne stares at the neat but lifeless detached house. In memory, the front door opens and Payne arrives home. Now, he stands in the empty, dark kitchen. In the golden glow of the past, he smiles at cards and baby pictures. He grins happily as he opens the well-stocked fridge, the smile playing on his lips as he walks through the glowing house. His smile fades as he reads something and sees a hole in a glass door. Alarmed, he rushes back through the kitchen.
Michelle!
He dashes upstairs.
Michelle! Michelle!
He shoots an intruder.
Michelle!
He's jumped by a guy with a huge machete.
It's okay. The angels burn within them now.
He shoots the guy off him and batters down the door marked Baby, then fires at a figure diving out of the window. He stares in horror at his wife in a floral dress lying dead on the bed. The gun falls from his hand and his face crumples as grief overwhelms him. The baby's mobile chimes. He backs away, unable to tear his eyes from the scene. His face becomes the emotionless mask he still wears. The golden glow of the past fades, and now he stands in the same place in the empty bedroom, staring at where his wife was murdered.
He was maybe 10 minutes too late.
Payne's face is expressionless as he walks past the bed and approaches the window. The mobile is still hanging in the same place. He slams the window shut.
We looked everywhere for the third guy, but there was nothing to go on. Max transferred to cold case. Working leads that went nowhere. He was never the same.
Of course not.
Understand. This is my old partner's kid. He's family. You gotta help him here. You should hear the kind of things Max is saying. None of it makes any sense. He's gotten in his head that someone here at the company is responsible. I'm worried he's gonna get into another situation before I can convince him to come in.
So you really think he's
gonna... I think you need to find him.
The internal affairs man studies Hensley, then leaves. Hensley slumps despondently against his desk and hangs his head. A figure in a light-colored overcoat stands in the rain and checks his watch. He tries to shield himself from the rain with a newspaper and acknowledges an approaching car. CEO of ASA, Nicole Horn, is in the back seat.
What is it, Jason?
Right here.
He hands her an envelope. She eyes him sternly and opens it. Inside is an ASA folder containing a photo of Sergeant Jack Lupino in U.S. Army combat uniform. She considers the photo without emotion, then turns to Jason.
Is this a threat?
No. No, I just thought you should be aware.
She passes back the envelope.
Just take care of it, Jason.
The limousine pulls away, leaving Jason standing crestfallen in the downpour, watching her go. He shuffles away unhappily. Later, he enters offices at the top of the glass pinnacle of the ASA building. Wet and unhappy, he retrieves his messages from a secretary.
There's someone in your office.
She fiddles with her necklace as he looks through the messages.
It's a detective.
He fixes her with a stern gaze. There are photos of a little girl and a young woman on his office wall. Payne is waiting for him.
Is your daughter?
Yes, it is. 3 years old.
She's beautiful.
Is there something I can help you with, Detective?
I don't know yet.
Maybe if you told me what this was about.
It's a homicide. Multiple homicides.
I didn't get your name.
Max Payne.
Sorry, I didn't recognize you.
It's okay. What can you tell me about what Michelle was working on? Right before she died.
Routine projects? Nothing really out of the ordinary.
Payne's emotionless eyes bore into him.
Like, it's really hard to be specific that long ago.
Well, can't you look it up?
I don't know how I would, really.
Payne grins and strides away from him.
You know, that far back, any documents that we had would be gone, and...
Payne walks back, having locked the door.
I'm not sure of any other way.
So there's just no trace of her?
It's nothing personal. We just, can't keep save everything and
you need to make a call.
Maybe I should.
Yeah. Beautiful office you have here.
Jackie. Hi.
He rips the phone out.
What do you know?
Wait.
I need to talk to somebody about a woman that used to work here.
Oh, you can have a seat over there.
Bravura, in a trilby hat and a Mac, nods. Jason's secretary approaches the office.
Mr. Colvin?
You're lying to me. Why?
I'm not!
Mr. Colvin?
Tell me what happened to Michelle.
I don't know.
Mr. Colvin, are you okay?
Jackie!
Mr. Colvin, it's Jackie. I can't hear you. Are you all right?
The office staff rise from their desks.
What was she working on?
I don't know. I was in charge of a different project. It was a government contract.
What did it have to do with Michelle?
Nothing. She was just...
The secretary gets on the phone.
Security.
Can I speak to BB, please?
Yeah.
BB, help, it's Jackie. Jason's in trouble.
What?
Well, should I call your guys?
No. I'll call.
Hurry, please.
Payne draws his gun and points it at Jason's leg.
It was a military operation. It was something to make soldiers more aggressive in combat. It was a disaster. It only worked on 1%. Made them invincible. All right? The rest suffered horrible hallucinations. Devils, demons. It drove them insane. The effects were uncontrollable. And this stuff was so addictive, we couldn't even guarantee the safety of our own scientists. We had to shut it down. The test subjects, they'd follow them home. They'd kill them just for an extra dose.
Is that what happened to Michelle?
No.
He points the gun at Jason's head. In the lobby, Bravura's getting fed up. He gets to his feet as armed troops storm into the building. He draws his pistol.
What do you mean, no? What happened to her then?
Oh, please, Jesus, please. She didn't even know what was coming for her.
Mr. Colvin, I called security and they're on their way.
I will tell you what happened. You gotta get me out of here, though. Right now.
What are you talking about?
I will confess to everything, but you gotta
That's
get me out of here.
That's not good enough. You tell me what happened to her right now.
She was killed because of the drug. The envelope. Bring it with us. Everything, it's all in there. Please. You gotta protect me from him.
Who are you talking about?
The man who killed your wife!
Get the envelope.
Get it!
Jason grabs the envelope.
Let's go.
Payne grabs him by the scruff of the neck and hustles him out of the office.
Calm down! They're back!
The soldiers surge in. One raises his weapon. In slow motion, Jason grimaces as the round hits him in the chest. Payne looks on in disbelief as he sinks to the floor, then catches the eye of the soldier who fired. As the man raises his rifle again, Payne draws his automatic. Payne takes out one, then dives for cover.
This is Jim Bravura, IA. What unit is responding to the exit call?
Pinned down, Payne returns fire from behind a filing cabinet.
The ASA building, you mean nobody's caught anything in yet?
Would you like to report an incident?
Hell yes, I'd like to report something. We have machine gun fire in Midtown.
A member of staff goes down as papers are shredded by the hail of bullets. Shotgun slugs punch right through the metal cabinets around Payne. He aims at a sprinkler head. Flee the gushing sprinklers, he scrambles for the envelope, grabs it, and runs. Firing as he runs, he takes down another soldier as they unload at him with everything they have. Papers and bits of debris fly everywhere as the soldiers stand on desks to fire. Payne's hit in the arm, but keeps going. He shoots another guy in the leg. The man crashes through a glass table. He shoots out a code keypad, dives horizontally through the door, and lands rolling into a storeroom. He topples a heavy cabinet against the door.
Put your hands up! You need to come in now!
Out of chance!
Come on! Is this about your wife?
Colvin knew!
Take it easy, Max. Just come in and we'll talk about this right now, all right?
Clear!
Rivera is knocked down as the soldiers blow the door, and Payne runs off.
Go! Great job, boys. You see what you did? You let him get away. Everybody's gonna get a medal for this. Great.
He kicks out in frustration. The headlights on Mona's car blaze as she drives through an old industrial facility.
I'm at the office. I'll call you back.
She turns off the headlights and gets out of the car carrying her machine pistol. She walks up some steps. Cautiously approaches a broken glass door. She pushes the door open with the muzzle of her weapon and slips through.
given them the combat edge in conflicts of the future. Valkyr, 100% effective, 100% combat tested. The new weapon in the war on terror. Valkyr, the strength of freedom. Valkyr, winning the war on terror.
I need to see this.
Lupino's picture is next to a DVD cover.
From the dawn of time, great generals have always known the one fundamental truth of warfare. Morale wins battles. Thanks to the breakthroughs made by Asir Pharmaceuticals, the military of tomorrow will be able to unlock the limitless potential inside every soldier. Introducing Valkyr, the strength of freedom.
That's what this is about? A drug?
A vial of blue liquid appears on the TV screen, followed by a title. Sergeant Jack Lupino, test subject number 53.
How has your experience of combat improved since taking the drug Valkyr?
Well, I'm never scared for starters.
Describe to me, if you will, how is Valkyr winning the war on terror?
You face down a group of insurgents, and instead of fear, you're filled with peace, I guess. It's like something's watching over you from above. You feel like you have wings.
So wouldn't you say you feel stronger, more secure, more capable?
Oh, definitely. It's just whatever it takes to win the war out there. I feel indestructible. Nothing can stop me. I can face anything.
Have you noticed any side effects?
I can only speak for myself, and no. I apologize. You want to do it again?
No, we're good.
Payne hangs his head.
Killed my wife. Natasha, too.
He's in an old club called Ragnarok. You know where it is.
Yeah.
He gets up, walks away, and loads shells into a shotgun.
Forget it, Max. You go there, you die. You have my help with anything else, but not to go in there.
Yeah, you keep it.
She stares as he keeps loading shells.
You don't want to make it out alive. You think that if he puts you out of your misery, you'll be with them again.
Yeah, I hope that's how it works.
On top of a building, a sign with large red letters spells out Ragnarok. Drifting snowflakes catch the nighttime lights. A figure stands on the rooftop looking out over the city, holding a large blade behind his head. It's Lupino. Muscled torso, topless in the snow, he lowers the blade and takes a vial of Valkyr from his pocket. He stares at it, then pours it down his throat. He drops the empty vial and eases out the muscles in his neck. Vapor rises from the old industrial building housing Ragnarok. Payne jogs along a walkway holding the shotgun. Below, a guard on the dingy entrance to the club tries to keep warm, rubbing his hands together. The guard opens the door to the club and looks in. When he closes the door, Payne's waiting. Payne advances through the ruined industrial interior of Ragnarok. A shadow darkens the floor of the corridor ahead. One guy goes down, another is flung backwards by the power of the shotgun. Payne moves stealthily through the shadows. He emerges into the light on a walkway, then descends a flight of metal stairs. Light flickers, and he stops, looking and listening. He advances through a storage area, where pallet loads of canisters of Valkyr are wrapped in black plastic, and there are trays full of the small glass vials. Steam hisses from a large metal pot. There are more blue vials, a syringe containing the drug, and a small pile of blue powder. Payne picks up a vial and examines it. Two armed guys approach a closed door. One of them counts to three on his fingers. They blast the storeroom. Enveloped in a haze of gun smoke, they edge cautiously forwards. As one of them checks between piles of canisters, Payne pops up. He eyes the bodies dispassionately. A figure advances in a slow-motion run on a walkway, above and behind him. As the man raises his rifle, Payne senses the presence, and in super slow motion, flings himself backwards, bringing the shotgun over his head in front of his face, ejecting spent shells. Rifle rounds slam into trays of Valkyr, causing explosions of glass and blue liquid. Payne's slugs tear through the walkway, hurling the man against a wall. Payne jumps up and readies his weapon. He moves further into the dimly lit drugs factory and reloads the shotgun. There are storage cages, flickering lights ahead, and water pours from a broken pipe into the depths of the building. He stops and raises the weapon. He kicks down the door to the candlelit room where Lupino killed the guy taped to the chair. He enters cautiously, shotgun at the ready. He clocks a table covered with Valkyr paraphernalia, the clusters of burning candles, and the tilted back chair bolted to the floor in the center of the room. He's kicked to the floor by a figure swinging down from the shadows overhead. Lupino attacks with his blade. Payne parries using the gun, the blade slamming into the metal floor as he rolls away. With his enhanced strength, Lupino forces him to the floor, the shotgun held across his chest, holding the blade at bay.
You hear them coming? We'll see which one of us they're fighting for. We'll see which one of us they love best.
Sweat pours off Lupino.
God, you're so lost. The angels are not done with you yet!
Lupino lowers his blade, stares at the hole in his chest, and falls. A figure emerges from the shadows. It's B.B. Hensley. Payne picks himself up and stares in surprise.
B.B.?
Hensley moves slowly towards him.
What's going on here, B.B.?
Let's go. Let's get out of here.
He's helped to his feet and glances at Lupino before limping away, holding Hensley's arm.
Baby, what's going on here? Baby, I looked at Lupino, he didn't know who I was. What are you doing here?
He's knocked out by Hensley's Acer colleague, who points his gun at him.
Now?
No, not yet. Cuff him.
Handcuffed, He walks angrily between the two men.
What was I supposed to do? Michelle kept nosing around. Some boxes from a dead project went missing. She mentioned it to me without knowing what it really meant. I had to talk to her. Show her my side before she took it to someone else. Before that night, the things that went wrong for me seemed impossible to do anything about. Michelle was the first problem in my life small enough to reach out and start.
Payne glares furiously at him.
Once that happened, though, once I realized I could use the strength of my hands to keep one thing from being taken away from me. Well, by the time Michelle stopped screaming that night, I'd learned the most amazing lesson. I could have been doing this my entire life. I was a new person that night. And from there, figuring out how to put the drug on the street, how to make use of Lupino and the rest of them, that was easy. But only because of Michelle. The first problem I really solved for myself.
In memory, Payne bursts into his baby's room and fires at the man fleeing out of the window. Hensley's face is reflected on a small mirror on the mobile. The memory fades in a flare of white, and Payne's face reflects a rising tide of emotion.
Okay, enough. Enough of this shit. BB!
It's not like we didn't see it coming. Sullen, withdrawn. Max just never seemed the same after the tragedy. Grab me some of that rope. That's a good thing his father didn't live to see it, though. The great Bill Payne's only son. A strung out junkie suicide.
He pops two vials into Payne's pocket.
It would have eaten him alive.
Payne knocks down the associate, headbutts Hensley, and sprints away from being drowned tied to a heavy iron weight.
Get him down!
In the shadow of a moored tanker, Payne sprints to the end of the pier and leaps off. Bullets zip through the water as he sinks below the ice-crusted surface of the river and swims for his life. Out of ammo, Hensley peers at the dark, icy waters.
Screw him. He'll freeze to death.
The two men walk away. Out of air, Payne breaks the surface and tries to keep his head above the water, flailing desperately. He sinks below a large chunk of ice, but pushes his way up again. His strength spent, he's pulled towards the depths, sinking slowly into the blackness. Bubbles stream from his mouth. In the golden glow of memory, he walks through his house. He looks down at the dead guy with the machete lying in the upstairs hall. In the water, he continues to sink. In his mind, he frowns without emotion in the hallway. He hangs motionless in the water. He opens the door with baby on it. Michelle is sitting on the edge of the bed with their child. Reflections from the mobile dapple the walls of the room. Michelle looks at him.
Not yet, Max.
Underwater, his eyes spring open and he kicks for the surface. Head above the water, he swims through the ice-flecked river. He's half swimming and half scrambling over ice.
No.
grabs onto a tire attached to the side of the pier. He hauls himself up onto the empty snow-covered pier across the river from the twinkling lights of the nighttime city. As he lies shivering from the cold, the image of Hensley's smiling face flashes into his mind. He reaches into his pocket, feeling for the vials of Valkyr, and downs both. He grits his teeth as the drug takes hold. He rolls over and gets to his feet, the snow becoming sizzling sparks around him. As he roars, flame illuminates the clouds. Dark-winged Valkyries swoop among the skyscrapers and along the pier. Face a mask of fury, he limps away through the blizzard of hot sparks with the Valkyries swarming overhead. Mona stands at a window, looking out at the city lights.
Bravura! What the hell is going on? Why is half my force sitting here instead of being out on the street? Under what authority?
I am investigating the shooting of an unarmed civilian, Jason Colvin, and the attempted murder of Detective Max Payne.
Really? Well, I heard he took the first shot. And if I know the kind of men that I serve with, I don't think that they're going to contradict that.
Yeah, and what kind of men would that be?
These are real cops.
Oh.
No offense.
None taken. Agent Taliente, I'd like you to meet a real cop.
Detective. Jack Taliente, Special Agent FBI. Who are you?
The detective picks up a phone. In his office, Hensley hangs up, looking worried.
Rivera called in the FBI. They're on their way.
Grabbing papers and his jacket, he makes to leave.
For God's sakes, come on! Max is dead!
They got nothing else.
Come on!
His associate stuffs money into a briefcase. He and Hensley run for a lift.
Let's go!
Calm down, Joe.
They're surrounded by guards.
This is Air 1 for City Northbound, 350-500, ETA 3 Mike. And give me a frequency to push to.
Air 1, monitor my frequency, 126.05.
Copy that, dispatch. We're inbound.
The car's waiting, sir.
Guards open the doors to the car park for Hensley and his entourage. A guard raises his rifle as the driver's body is pushed out of a limousine.
Oh, shit. He's not dead, he's here. Bullshit!
Two guards fall in the hail of fire as Payne assaults out of the darkness. A car gets riddled, and another two guards go down. The money case is hit, scattering notes, and the last guards are taken out. In his fury, Payne sees flames blazing around the fleeing men.
Did Air 1 say your last?
Air 1, we need more information. You got Burger on the line for us. We need more information on this situation.
Who you calling?
As Hensley calls, Joe looks at the ruined briefcase. Nicole horns in her car.
It's late.
I need you to send a helicopter to the roof.
What are you talking about, BB?
The Michelle Payne thing's coming back on us.
In a corridor, Payne scans for targets. Armed guards with torches move through the ASA building at a run.
Air 1, this is Lieutenant Jim Bravura. Federal agents in uniforms are inbound at this time.
A barrage cuts down the advancing guards. Hensley opens a storage unit. Payne activates the pump action on his shotgun, one-handed.
Thanks for C4. Wire it so he can't make it to the roof.
Are you nuts?
You saw him. You saw him, Joe. He isn't gonna stop.
Manic with anger, he steps in front of a mural of a staring eye. A Valkyrie-winged shadow passes over the wall.
Stop!
He dispatches guards lying in wait behind cabinets, then gets shot. He rolls away from another blast, kicks the guy's leg, jumps up, and they grapple. The shot lifts the guard off his feet. Payne gasps, his teeth clenched.
Hey, we got multiple shots fired. We need backup ASAP.
Copy that, PDR-1.
As the chopper's spotlight shines on him, Payne sinks to his knees. A Valkyrie flares its dark wings in front of him. He reaches out to the menacing apparition. As the light flares again, revealing another figure.
Max.
She walks towards him in a white nightdress.
Max.
A guard creeps into the office area. The Valkyrie raises its head, its eyes two pinpoints of light in its dark form. Fire streams through cracks in the ceiling. Then the whole ceiling is ripped away, becoming a maelstrom of swirling fire and circling Valkyries. Payne kneels on the floor, hunched over, pellet wounds in his right shoulder, as the white light from the chopper and the orange glow of the Valkyr flames play over him. The guard approaches, his pistol raised. The Valkyrie lurks, silhouetted in the chopper's light. Mona takes down the guard who is about to shoot, and the Valkyries take flight up into the billowing flames. As the fire recedes, Payne kneels and rocks in agony.
I will hold them off for as long as I can, but you have to finish this. Max, come on. Come on. Open. Take it. Max, come on, look at me. You're not done yet.
He looks into her eyes. Police cruisers speed through the city. Hensley, phone to his ear, runs out onto the snowy rooftop. A phone shows BB calling. In her car, Nicole Horn stares out of the window and kills the call. Light shines through the bullet holes as a door is blasted. Mona strides through. An LED winks on a timer on a C4 charge. Joe finishes taping the charges to a pillar. A guard is covering him. Joe looks around as the guard goes down. Mona walks in, machine pistol slung at her hip.
Be careful with that thing. Come on now, Mona.
He reaches into his coat.
I'm sure we can work something out.
She lets fly at him, then backs into a lift as more guards open up. She ducks and fires. One goes down. The lift doors close.
Baby!
Payne hurls himself into Hensley's office. Bathed in sweat, he looks around the darkened room. An orange glow fills the room. Payne stares. Outside the window, the city is engulfed in flame, and Valkyries flock. One flies at the window.
Detective Max Payne is in the line of fire. Snipers will not take the shot.
Yura gets out of the back of a car.
Kapura! Take Payne alive if there's anything left.
Badly wounded, Joe rolls over and reaches for the detonator to set off the charges. He flicks up the safety cover, exposing a switch.
Calm down, baby.
Fire erupts from an upper floor of the Acer Tower. It billows towards the chopper and engulfs an office area in a storm of glass, furniture, and dockings. Windows are blown out by the concussion, including the window in front of Payne. The Valkyrie dissolves away and the flames recede. Debris and a large chunk of concrete fall to the ground. A police car gets flattened. Payne kneels, fighting for control. Blinds flutter from the blown-out windows. He gets to his feet. Armed officers swarm through the wreckage on the ground. Bravura stands dazed next to the wrecked police car.
Bravura! You all right?
Get everybody upstairs, now!
Guys, that's our cue! Decision one, upstairs, right now! On the double, let's go!
Hensley stands on the helipad at the very top of the skyscraper. As the call rings out, Payne bursts onto the roof. Hensley's gun jams. Payne stands swaying, looking dazed. Dark clouds scud over the city. With his right arm hanging limply, Payne lurches towards Hensley, who stands, rooted to the spot.
It's unbelievable, all that snow. And watch it end up being a beautiful day. You want my confession first?
He stands with his arms outstretched.
Max!
Payne raises his automatic, frowning, his eyes boring into Hensley. Snowflakes settle on his hand and the gun. The gun fires in a puff of snow and the bullet bursts out of Hensley's back. Hensley sinks to his knees and falls forward. Payne looks up to the sky. Blood pools by the body as he lurches towards it. He drops the gun and sinks to his knees at the edge of the helipad next to the flashing navigation lights. The clouds lighten. The city and Max Payne are bathed in the glow of the morning sun. He sighs and looks to the sky.
I don't know about heaven.
In a burst of golden light, he sees his wife and their baby sitting on the edge of the bed.
I do believe in angels.
Michelle smiles at the baby and at him.
Yeah, it's Daddy.
Hey, buddy.
Is that your daddy?
Smiling, he picks up the child. He hugs it to his shoulder.
Not yet, Max.
On the helipad, he sighs and looks around as armed officers gather behind him. In the soft morning light, smoke rises from the damaged skyscraper, and Payne continues to kneel at the edge of the helipad. He lowers his head. Directed by John Moore, flame billows above the title. Screenplay by Bo Thorne. In Another Burst of Flame, produced by Julie Yorn, Scott Fay, and John Moore. Executive producers Rick Yorn, Karen Lauder, and Tom Karnowski. A Ball of Flame beneath Director of Photography, Jonathan Seller. Fire licks at production designer Daniel T. Dorrance. Glass showers film editor Dan Zimmerman. An explosion illuminates costume designer George L. Little. Music by Marco Beltrami and Buck Sanders. Solid metal letters resolve into bold red. Max Payne. The title ejects a shotgun cartridge. The lettering has a jagged metal top. A pistol trigger appears behind Mark Wahlberg, and a cartridge ejects past Mila Kunis. There's a shotgun muzzle behind Beau Bridges. Shotgun ejects behind Chris Ludicrous Bridges. A pistol aims at the shotgun behind Chris O'Donnell. Broken glass showers Donald Logue. And swirls around Amorine Olasco. Light pours through bullet holes, Kate Burton. And Olga Kurylenko as casings stream from a machine pistol. A pistol fires, casting by Mindy Marin, CSA. And fires again, a 20th Century Fox presentation. A Firm Films and Depth Entertainment production. a burst of shell casings, a John Moore film. Smoke Rises from the cast list, starring Mark Wahlberg as Max Payne, Mila Kunis as Mona Sachs, Beau Bridges as B.B. Hensley, Chris Ludacris Bridges as Jim Bravura, Chris O'Donnell as Jason Colvin, Donald Logue as Alex Balder, and Maureen Olasco as Jack Lupino. Kate Burton as Nicole Horn, Olga Kurylenko as Natasha, Rutherford Gray as Joe Sal, Joel Gordon as Owen Green, Jamie Hector as Lincoln Deneuf, Andrew Friedman as Trevor, Marianne Evans as Michelle Payne, Nelly Furtado as Krista Balder, Jay Hunter as Pawnshop Man, Maxwell McCabe-Locos as Doug, Kerr Hewitt as Kid, Stephen Hart as Tattoo Artist Owner, Martin Mako Hindi as Demon, Herbert Johnson as Train Attendant, Philip Williams as Sergeant Adams, Warren Bell as Detective, Ted Atherton as Detective Shipman, Rico Simonini as Detective Sergeant Amerini, PJ Lazick as Junkie, Brandon Carrera as Young Cop, Katie Odegaard as Receptionist Jackie, Joshua Barilko as Ragnarok Guard No. 1, Conrad Pla as Captain Bowen, Barry Wheatley as Bartender, Janice Guyen as Detective, Gauchy Boy as Doorman, Spike Adamson as Acer Security Guard, Carlos Gonzalez Villo as Man Who Gets Dosed with Drug, Lana Dennis, Christina Jokic, Barrington Bignall, Noel Gray, James Rogers and Candice Hotchkiss as Nude People Making Out, Gendai Stolganovs as Enforcer, Dale Yim as Beat Cop, Tig Fong as Lead Acer Security Guard, Siobhan Murphy as Receptionist No. 2, Sergei Nikolic as Anton, Christina Falkomer as Girl at Party. The producers wish to thank the following for their assistance. City of Toronto, Ontario, Canada. City of Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Shot on location in Ontario, Canada, with assistance from Ontario Media Development Corporation. Public Enemy poster licensed by Warner Brothers Entertainment Incorporated and Turner Entertainment Company. Copyright 2008, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation and June Entertainment 3 LLC in all territories except Brazil, Italy, Japan, Korea, and Spain. Copyright 2008 TCF Hungary Film Rights Exploitation Limited Liability Company, 20th Century Fox Film Corporation and June Entertainment 3 LLC in Brazil, Italy, Japan, Korea, and Spain. 20th Century Fox Film Corporation is the author of this motion picture for purposes of copyright and other laws. The events, characters, and firms depicted in this photoplay are fictitious. Any similarity to actual persons living or dead, or to actual events or firms, is purely coincidental. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws, and any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. Further titles continue to scroll. Golden light filters into a quiet bar. Payne enters. The bald barman looks up and smiles at him. Payne acknowledges with a nod. He walks up to the bar and the man opens a beer for him.
It's good to have you back.
Opening a second beer, he indicates across the room behind Payne, who looks around. He takes the beers and walks across the room past empty tables. He passes a beer to Mona, who's sitting in a booth. He sits down opposite her.
Hey.
She gives a half smile, purses her lips, and puts a newspaper on the table. He studies a headline. Acer Farmer soars. Record-breaking flotation lifts stock price. With a photo of a smiling Nicole Horn. He takes a swig of beer. Mona studies him affectionately, and their eyes meet. Audio description by Deluxe, written and voiced by Roland Bean. The end.